Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Richard Ray, 33 years of combination experience, third-generation firefighter, battalion chief for A-Shift in the 4th Battalion for the City of Durham Fire Department. Firefighting is in the bloodline for the Ray family, so it was inevitable that Richard was going to gravitate towards it. Going career wasn't exactly what Richard planned, but it was in his cards. If you ever get a chance to hear Richard speak, when you do, there is no doubt that he truly loves the job and wants anyone around him to be better versions of themselves. To get there, one must find or seek out that mentor who can show you a side of yourself you didn't know existed. One of my favorite quotes from Richard is, "If we're going to be aggressive firefighters, it can't just be lip service." With that, I present Richard Ray.
So my name's Richard Ray, battalion chief with the City of Durham Fire Department. In Durham, North Carolina. I 33-year member of the fire service. Probably a more accurate statement is a 33-year student of the fire service. I got my start with the Creedmoor Volunteer Fire Department back in April of 1992, where I'm a generational firefighter there. I'm a third generation. I grew up around the fire service, but I really didn't my plan to be a full-time firefighter, a career firefighter, if you will, didn't really happen until my sophomore year of college. I took a training class with some folks, and it just the light bulb came on and said, this is what I'm going to do for a career. And I finished out my degree at East Carolina University and come back to Durham and started a life with my beautiful wife, and we have two wonderful kids, and so that's who I am.
Okay. So third generation volunteers always essentially been in the bloodline of the fire service. When you were younger, I'm sure you had folks that were taking you to the fire station, letting you see the fire trucks, things like that. So did you always know deep down inside like it was inevitable?
So as a kid growing up, I can remember this, and this is so funny. My dad would go to the fire meeting every Tuesday night. That's when they meet. And I mean, it was even back in the late 70s and early 80s. I mean, that they were meeting every week back then. But I remember as a kid wanting to go up there, and I would be hesitant about asking him to go because, you know, it was an adult environment, and you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the fire station. But I always wanted to go. And so as I got older, the fire department, this is kind of a funny piece, I guess. The Creedmoor Fire Department kind of made me their mascot, if you will. But I was just somebody that – I was a younger kid that they were trying to help bring up through. And I guess in deep down, I had an inkling of the notion that I wanted to be a firefighter. But when I graduated high school, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Went to East Carolina and was there and, you know, changed my major around a little bit, took some criminal justice classes. And then I decided that I had an interest in business and I had an interest in computers. And that's kind of where I locked in at East Carolina, and I have a degree in business. And at the time at East Carolina, you would do a concentration, and it was in management information systems. And if, you know, for the older folks out there, if you remember Microsoft Access, that was kind of the platform that we used. But what I will tell you is that, you know, for the fire service, as I've progressed through the ranks and become an officer and that kind of stuff, I had a choice to make. Did I want to do human resources management? Did I want to do computers? What did I want to do? And I was contemplating human resource management. And my uncle said to me one day, he said, "That's fine, but just know that you're dealing with people, and it's not always the best part of a job sometimes." And I'm like, you know what? He's right. I'm going to do computers. Kind of wished I'd have done a little more human resource management with some of the stuff I've had to deal with through the years. But yeah, so that's kind of my background where it got my start. Like I said, I graduated from East Carolina, and I graduated in the fall, started with the city of Durham in '96, and December of '96, and started with in March of '97 with the city. And so it's yeah, to grow up around it, and it I inevitably I was going to be a volunteer fire department, because I remember as a kid as my dad telling him, my dad, you've been in the military, you're in the National Guard, I guess I'm going to do that. You're a mechanic, I guess I'm going to be a mechanic, and I'm going to be on the volunteer fire department. And I can remember it as clear as bell, because we were going to a little league ball game. He said, "I don't care what you do, whatever you do in life, make sure it's something that you enjoy and you love to do, because it'll be a lot easier on you getting up going to work, and your stress will be a whole lot less." And I can tell you right now that those words, no truer words have been spoken, because yeah, there's been some tough days in the fire department, but it's been a whole lot more good days. And when you can wake up and smile and go to work and look forward to it, that's something special. And so yeah, even as a kid, I thought I was going to be just like my dad. I was fortunate to grow up in a home where, I had that mentor, that leadership. I wanted to be like my dad. I make no bones about it, that he was my hero, and that's who I wanted to be like. And he very quickly told me, "No, you need to be your own person, be your own self. You need to grow into who you're going to be." But I'm like, "Dad, I've seen what you've done. You've been successful." And my dad was, I mean, he was kind of the go-to guy for the Creedmoor Fire Department for a lot of years, and he was a leader there, and a lot of people looked up to him, and not just in Creedmoor Fire Department, but in the county that we lived in. And so for me, yeah, I want to be just like him. And so I guess that kind of got me to the fire service. But when I started my career, when I started the career side, that's really when I picked up and went in my own direction, if you will. And that's been a special thing too. But yeah, like I said, I grew up watching my dad, and that's just, I guess it became inevitable that I was going to do the fire thing. And my grandfather, I'd spend a lot of Friday nights with him, because that was just what I wanted to do, and talk about the fire department. And he'd give me little nuggets from back when he was doing it through the 50s, 60s, and 70s, right? I mean, and so I just view all that as just special times and fond memories that I look back on, that I feel like developed me and helped made me the firefighter that I'm in that I am today. So.
Okay. Was Durham always the goal, or did you just kind of fill out applications wherever you could?
So that's a great question. So there was a guy that was on the Creedmoor Fire Department with me at the time, that he had worked in the radio shop in Durham, and he was also a communicator at one time in Durham. And when I would see him at the fire station in Creedmoor, he would talk about Durham, and he would talk about the fires that they're going to. And back then, there was a lot of newspaper articles and stuff. Durham goes to a fire today, and so I'm like, they go quite a bit of work, and yeah, I think Durham is an option. And so, but I applied to the city of Durham, and I applied to the city of Raleigh. And what I found was interesting is that when I took my test, the agility test, they were similar for both organizations. There were some differences, but the written test was the exact same. And I took the written test a couple weeks apart, and I took Durham's first, and I knew what I'd scored on Durham's test, so I felt comfortable going in with Raleigh. So never knew what I scored on the test in Raleigh, never got an interview in Raleigh. But I did get the interview and the opportunity in Durham, and so that was the first place that, I guess you could say, picked me up, if you will. But when I got in there, I recognized, hey, this is where I want to be. And to that end, there's, through the years, there's been some Raleigh guys try to get me to come over there and be with them. And Raleigh's a great organization. Don't get me wrong, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that the city of Durham has been nothing but good to me, especially on the fire department side. The fire department's been really good to me. I've been very blessed. I've worked with some of the best in the business and worked on some really good companies. And if my career was to end today, I would have had, I can say I've had a great career, not just because I worked in the city of Durham, but because of some of the people that I had the opportunity to work alongside of. And the people have kind of made the career, the fires and the good stuff, all the fun stuff I've been able to do in Durham. That to me, that's been the icing on the cake, because the people that I've worked with were just, gosh, they were good firefighters. They were just good human beings too, and they made an impact in my fire service career for sure. So,
Okay.
so Durham's where it's been. Like I said, it's a great place.
Okay. So you applied, you get on. I'm assuming you have to go through some sort of abbreviated recruit class, rookie school.
So at the time, you had to go through the fire academy, which was our school was 20 weeks, and it was 3 weeks. We had 1 week of orientation, right, for the city. Then you had we did EMT, which was basic EMT in North Carolina. We did that for 3 weeks, and then we did 16 weeks of fire. And I was nervous because back in the mid 90s and stuff, there was, if you were a volunteer firefighter, a lot of times you were frowned upon in the hiring process for Durham. And so I thought being a volunteer in Creedmoor was gonna hurt me a little bit. And it may have, I don't know. But what I will tell you is that, I was arrogant. I was, my ego was all out of all, was all over, where it shouldn't be. I was kind of arrogant, and I thought that when I stepped in that fire academy, this is going to be easy, because I've got 5 years in the, in the service is how I looked at it. When I got in that academy, I realized just how much I did not know. And so for me, the fire academy, gosh, man, lifelong friends from the academy. Some of the instructors are lifelong friends, and what I learned in the academy to me is immeasurable to what it provided for my career. And like I said, when I got in the academy, I just realized just how much I didn't know. And so that, when I was that age, thankfully, my mind could remember a whole lot more stuff than it does now. But man, I was a sponge trying to absorb everything that I could. Durham was one of the things that we've been known for throughout my career is the aggressiveness on the fire ground and the work that we get to do. And that's what I was about, right? Good, aggressive interior firefighting. And that's what we promoted. And like I said, it was really a good thing. Like I said, graduated there. We graduated June of 97, and then my first assignment in the city of Durham was Engine 2 with Captain Schuler. Named my son after Captain Schuler. That's the impact that he had on my life. Went there, great place, great house. We covered Duke University, the medical center. It was busy, but we were considered the west side of town, and we didn't get to do a whole lot of firework as compared to the east side, if you will. It seemed like every work cycle that I went to work, the east side was catching a fire. And at that time, to tell you how times have changed, the structure fire assignment was two engines, a ladder, a rescue, and a battalion chief. Now it's four engines, two ladders, a rescue, a squad, two chiefs. I mean, it's so. I mean, when I first got on, it was really scaled back, and if you there was no such thing as a second alarm that time, because the chiefs, the old head chiefs, they're like, we're going to do it with what we got on scene. So if I went over to the east side 405 from engine two, it was something pretty significant. We went over there a few times, but got to do a lot of good stuff at station two. Gave me a good foundation for my career with the people that I got to work alongside of. And it was an engine and ladder in the house at the time. Safety officer run out of there and the chief run out of there. And so I spent 4 years there, left there, went to at that time was called Engine 7. It was a Quint. It was a technical rescue team because one of the things that I had tried to work on in my early career was we had a rescue truck, and the rescue truck went to every fire in the city, all the extrications, anything technical, hazmat, the rescue company went. And that was my goal. That's kind of where I wanted to be. And it didn't work out because they took the rescue out of service for some other things. And so I ended up on the technical rescue team. It was just at the time, it was an engine company. Well, the engine company, we rode a Quint. So spent some time there with Captain Mangum and those good folks. And Captain Mangum was, man, he, Captain Shull and Captain Mangum, they were just, man, they were ice cold on the fire ground. It didn't seem like anything would shake them. And we run some serious calls, and the experience level that those two gentlemen brought to my fire service career and their example for me, it really helped me when I was promoted to officer. But worked there for a few years. When it was time for me to promote up to captain, I was moved over to the training division because I'd spent a lot of time teaching the academies and that kind of stuff. So I spent some time in the training division. Left the training division, went back on a company, went to a hazmat company, and it was a newer station at the time. It'd been open at that point a few years, but it wasn't as busy as it is now. And then I went to a ladder company, and then I ended up on engine three, which was where I wanted to be, because engine three in Durham was is the bit at that time was the busiest company. It was my first 15 days there, I went to 18 fires. I thought I'd died and go to heaven. And
Wow.
so it's it it was it was a good little place to work. Again, I was the officer there, and worked with some top-notch firefighters during my tenure there. And I was there for almost 8 years, and then went back to the training division. And real. I was in the training division for about 18 months after that because we were on shift training officers at that time. And went back to company, spent another 18 months on engine nine, roughly, and then took the battalion chief's test and didn't pass, but got put in an active position anyway because we had a vacancy because we had some chiefs moving around. And then I was promoted to chief in 2018, and I've been a battalion chief ever since. So it's been a good ride. When I was promoted battalion chief, I went to at the time we only had three chiefs on shift, and then Durham County and Durham City, Durham County Fire Department merged with the city, and then so we grew a fourth battalion, and so I was able to get over to the fourth battalion. It's on the east side of town, and I really like working over there. I've got some good people that I work alongside of. I work out of a good house with good people. Right now we have. I run out of Station 9. Station 9 has the USAR component there for Task Force 8 and for the swift water side. And we also have a safety officer that runs out of there. And then our quartermaster position runs out of there, which the quartermaster does the turnout gear stuff. So, like I said, it's been, man, it's been a great career, phenomenal career, but it's been a quick one too. I went to a retirement dinner. Early on in my career, I mean, I think within the first few months of me being on the job, and I don't remember who the retiree was, said, "Do you young guys don't blink because it's going to go by in a hurry?" Well, when you're a young kid and you're looking 30 years down the road, you're thinking, "Man, this guy's crazy, right?" 30 years is a long time because I hadn't even been on this earth 30 years at that point, right? But 30 years, it's going by quick, and so there's a lot of truth in that statement too. But it's been a good ride.
I'm going to go back just a little bit. You mentioned that your first captain, you named your son after him. So my question to you is, well, this is not really a question yet, but Obviously, that captain had a profound impact on you. So my question to you now is, how important is it for firefighters who are coming into the service to find those mentors, find those firemen that are into the job?
I think that is huge, because he done two things for me. Number one, he set the example in the fire station for me. He set the example of how an officer operates, how he leads his people, how he conducts business around the fire station. But he also taught me about being a good husband and a good son and being a good dad, because I saw he was the exact he set the example for me. And you know, that is huge, because I don't think there's any firefighter in the service today that hasn't had a mentor at some point in their career that's poured into them. But when you start evaluating your career and what's helped you to be successful, you've got to give credit where credit is due, and it's to the mentors who've poured into you. So I think what it does is it shines the light that you need to be the mentor for the younger kids as well, right? And you know, he was into the job, and he, you know, I this is something I say about every day. I want to go to a fire today. If I'm at work, I want to go to a fire. And he embraced that too, right? He was right there with us. And you know, he was at the time he was a little bit older in the job, and he was working on a busy company, which that in itself, right, set the tone too. And you know, like, I'll tell you, I didn't want to disappoint him. And so that's tried to be somewhat of an example that I've tried to set too for my people and the people that I try and lead, is I try and set that bar high. But I also, if I'm going to set that bar high, I got to live it. And Captain Schuller, he lived it. And for me, that was a huge moment in my career. And I think that a lot of the issues that we find today in the fire service, for me, this is just my thoughts now, I think goes back to we need good leaders and good mentors. And Captain Schuller was never about himself. He was about the crew. To that end, the first day on engine two, my very first day, we get, you know, obviously we get there, shift change, go through the ritual, you know, I'm trying to learn, take it all in. And he says, "Hey, look, we got Con Ed. So we're gonna get the truck checked, you know, grab a little bite to eat. We gotta be station one and I think by 8 o'clock, I think was the time." So we shift change at 7. So I didn't leave a lot of time to really get my feet wet with the truck and all that kind of stuff. So we go to Con Ed, and we walk in the room, and this has been, you know, there's things that you won't ever forget in your career, and this is one of them. And one of the older officers says to Captain Shula, who's the new kid?" And Captain Schuller was very quick to say, "He doesn't work for me, he works with me." And I'm like, wow, here I am, first 2 hours on the job, and I, in my opinion, I work for Captain Schuller, but his view was that we work together, that he's working with me. And that was huge. And that's kind of how I tried to envision my leadership style with my battalion now, is that, yeah, I'm their leader. I guess by true definition, they work for me, but in my mind, I work with them. And if anybody works for anybody, my belief is that I work for my people. And that was one of the things that Captain Shula did really well too, was that he worked for his people, and he was an advocate for his people. And he'll tell you know, if you're right, you know, I'm gonna go to the nth degree, he said, but you know, if you're wrong, I'm gonna hold you accountable there too, you know. And he did it. And I'll tell you, my biggest fear was I never wanted to disappoint him. And for my fire service career, one of the things that I really struggled with is I just wanted to be accepted, right? And all I had to do to be accepted was just do the job and do it well. Keep my mouth shut, keep my eyes and ears open, keep my nose to the grindstone, work hard. And that's really all I needed to do. But I was too young and dumb to understand that piece. And that was one of the things that Captain Schuler kind of put me at ease at and did really well with, was that, hey, we work together, we're going to get through this. Hey, you've got a skill set. And one of his favorite sayings was, don't tell me, show me. And I had the opportunity to learn and improve myself. And what I think was the correct way was through my skill set, not through me telling somebody I could do something. It was through my actions. And that's kind of where I'm at with my people now too. So I think the mentors, especially those that are early on in your career, set the tone for your career. And to that end, I would be remiss if I didn't mention a couple of people with the Creedmoor Fire Department too, because I had mentors there, specifically Luke Steele. He's the one that got me started on FDIC. He was the one that said, let's go to FDIC. And here he is. He's a guy that by trade, he was a software programmer. But he was, there's nobody that does ropes and knots better, in my opinion. He was a damn good fireman. And he was good at the rescue side and the fire side. And he set an example for me too, right? About what it meant to learn and be into the job and to educate yourself. That and he was doing it just as a volunteer. And at that time it was true volunteer. He wasn't being compensated. It was what he sought out. And so he set that example for me about, getting outside of your comfort zone of your own fire department and growing that way. And then when I mixed with what Luke gave me and then what Captain Schuler gave me, I had an unbelievable foundation in that to build off of it. And that's what I really tried to do. So mentors are huge, I think. And again, we have young kids that come in the fire service today, and I'm sure I was just like them when I came in the fire service, but the big thing is that I think it's important to remember that we all start from the same position. Nobody walks in the fire service knowing it all, being all. Everybody's skill set is not where it should be. I mean, we all have to start there. And I think sometimes we don't do what we should for the new people and give them their due diligence, right? They've got to prove themselves. 100%, you've got to prove yourself in this job. And if you can't prove it, you can't cut it. I also think we got to be real with them too then. Hey, you're not cutting, you got to go. But I think that's how we leave the service better than we found it. In one way is that we share our knowledge, we pass on our skill sets, we make sure that our new people are strong in the foundation, right? That they know how to stretch lines, they know how to force doors, they know how to throw ladders, they understand building construction, they understand fire dynamics, and they can read a building that's on fire, right? And that's a lot of different things, but when you start putting in the pieces together and give them some perspective and let them see a little bit, now they can start referencing things, and it helps build that firefighter. And the mentors are the ones that paved that way. I mean, the instructors, they're huge too, right? I mean, they play a big role, and I would be remiss. I mean, there's some instructors out there who've been mentors for me, but it's that company officer, that one-on-one level, I think, that makes a big difference. And that one-on-one level is also, I feel like, how you can create that passion in the individual for the job, right? Because now they not only do they see you operate on the job, but when they can have some one-on-one conversation with you and learn about you and learn about, things outside of the fire service that drives you and helps you to become better in the service, when they start to get to know you and get some insight there, I think that's where real learning and some real leadership begins to take place. And it's one of those deals where we've got to have mentors in the service, because if we don't, the service is gonna we're gonna go down a road that we don't want to go down, in my opinion. So yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Now, how long did you wait before you decided to start moving up the ranks, and why?
Okay, so that's a good question. So One of the things that the Captain Shula always told me is like, look, don't ever let a promotion pass you by. It's an opportunity. You grow that way because you're going to be challenged. My fire service career, when I started out as the firefighter, one of the things that, we had a process in Durham back then was that, I was in a house with a ladder. So we had this thing called a bucket certification, which is as the firefighter, you could at least set the truck up, you could operate the boom, you could operate from the platform. You couldn't drive the truck, but you could operate that piece of it. Well, that was the first step towards your promotional process, right? That was the step, because it allowed you to get over and ride the ladder company. So I did that, got my relief driver, because this was the process that I was taught, and it's the process that we had then. And so I worked as a firefighter from 97 to 2001. So fall, I want to say spring of 2002, I was promoted to driver. I think it was March of 2002. So I was a firefighter for roughly 5 years. They had some requirements for promotion to be a driver. I think you had to be on the department 4 years. So I met that requirement, and then I don't remember what the requirement was to promote up to officer, but from fall of 2001 to March 2002, I was in an acting position, promoted March 2002 to March of 2005. I think you had to be a driver for 2 years before you could be a captain. And so I promoted probably quicker than what I should have. One of the things that I missed out on as a driver, and I shouldn't say missed out on it, it was a different career path that I had, was that I was on a company that had two drivers. So the way the layout of the company was, you had the officer, two drivers, and one firefighter. And so the reason why there was two firefighters was because we had the technical rescue component, and because you had the technical rescue, more responsibility, more knowledge, that was the compensation they felt like was that you were a promoted driver on that piece. And so I never got the opportunity to be the lone driver on an apparatus, and it'd be mine, and kind of embrace that senior role, because when I was on the technical rescue team working out of Station 7, Johnny Holzclaw was the senior man there, and just a wealth of knowledge, the years that he spent on the rescue company, and just another good human being too. And that so I never got to be the true senior man, if you will, in the house, and I kind of missed that. But I was promoted up to company officer because there was a need in the training division, and I didn't particularly want to go to 8 to 5, but it was what happened. And then I was a company officer. June of 2005 was my promotion. Was still in the training division, and was a company officer for a number of years. I was a captain from June of 2005 to January 1 of 2018 was my year as a company officer. And so my belief is that I truly believe that the company officer is the best position in the fire department. I feel like that's where your greatest impact is, because you're not just impacting your crew, but you also impact that district that you serve. You can be it's just a, I can go down a rabbit hole about why I think the company officer is the best position, because I just believe that. But I was on Engine 3, did not want to get off of Engine 3. I took an acting stint in May of 2011 as a battalion chief, because at the time the leadership within the organization, they were really pushing me to be a battalion chief. I was filling in quite a bit in Battalion 1. And it seemed like every fire that I was going to was a two alarm fire. I was like, I could never get the residential fire. It was always big stuff. As to that end, the first day I ever acted as a chief, as a company, when I was filling in, the very first call that I ran was a working fire with a subject trap. So, I mean, it was like they threw me to the wolves right out the gate. And that was one of the things that it was in Engine 3's territory. So, I mean, it was one of those things that, I just being that company also, I felt like was where it was at, but they wanted me to be a chief. And so we had a chief retire, and I said, yeah, I'll act. And very quickly, I realized that the battalion chief thing, I wasn't ready, quite frankly. I just wasn't ready. And that was my own perception of my ability. But, I'm not going to joke to you. I missed the rig. I missed the guys. I missed the runs. But I also committed to them that I would pull this acting stint and that I would fulfill that obligation and I would do the absolute best that I could. So I acted for 6 months, and when I was done with that tenure, I went right back to Engine 3, and I was cool. I was happy. They moved a ladder company in 2013. Man, everything was great. The company officer that was on the ladder, it just the gel that was going on in that fire station was like no other that I had experienced at that time, maybe with the exception of my first stint on Engine 2 and Quint 7. But it was a really special place. And dude, we were going to a lot of fires, the good calls, shooting, stabbings, that kind of stuff. And we just worked well together. Well, the department had a different plan for Richard. And so they moved me to a training officer, an on shift training officer. And so I went there. And at the time, I'm not going to joke to you, I went kicking and screaming. I did not want to go. Man, I was working for a great battalion chief. I didn't want to leave him. But department had other plans, and so I went and I did the very best job that I could, and I felt like I did an okay job as an on shift training officer. But what I will tell you is that the on shift training officer, even though we were working out of Station One, where I mean that place is it seems like it runs all night. The sleep that I was starting to get did make an impact on my career, and it changed me. It kind of got me back to where I needed to be because I didn't realize that, 8 years on Engine 3, being up all night running, that you didn't realize how tired your body was. It's kind of the whole you can't see the forest for the tree, so to speak, right? And so even though I went kicking and screaming, I was very thankful for the training opportunity. And I will tell you that that was an eye-opening thing for me too. We had as soon as I got to the training division, the shift training officer mandate, we had this huge area where they were clearing out. They were going to put a bunch of car dealerships in. Man, we burned 12 houses and had like 15 others to train in. So the training environment that I had right out the gate to do some really good stuff was pretty awesome. And I had a training chief that was really, man, he supported me. He believed in me. He gave me what I needed. And his name's Jeff Bunnell. And he let me be a training officer. And by doing that, it allowed me to see a much deeper side of the organization, more so than I did when I was filling in that acting chief spot years earlier. And what all I can say is wow. But it got me prepared for the battalion chief's position is what is how I view the on shift training officer, because there were a lot of times where I would get there first, and they didn't particularly want me taking command or anything like that. But what I got to do was watch the fire ground and watch how guys operated. And I got outside of my own bubble and saw how some people were doing things and within my organization, that is. And it was very eye opening. I think it helped me as for my current role as a battalion chief. I really do. And then like I said, I went back to company for about 18 months, and then I went to then I went I've been a chief ever since. So as far as Yeah, from firefighter to driver to captain, yeah, I really tried to go as quickly as I could. Not necessarily saying that's the right thing, but from captain to battalion chief, I really slowed that process down. And again, because I love the position of the company officer. Riding the right front seat of the busiest engine in Durham was nothing short of humbling and just a blessing, because this is a good place to work.
Okay.
So.
I want to talk to you about leadership, and
Okay.
it's fitting because you have been a company officer and now you're a chief officer. So, in your opinion, what does leadership look like for both roles?
All right, so that's a great question. And I think the leadership in both roles is actually a little bit different, because of the amount of people that you're
Right,
leading,
right.
and where in the position that you're leading from, right? But what I will tell you is that as there are some differences, there are some similarities too, of course. So one I think is lead by example, right? If when I was on company, obviously I had to my firefighter skill set had to be on point, right? Because I and my EMT skills had to be on point. Even though I'm that leader, I'm that supervisor, if you will, I have to ensure that my people are doing the right things, that I'm training them the right way, and that my actions match my words as much as anything, right? Right. If we're going to be good, aggressive firefighters, I just can't give it lip service. I got to prove that, hey, we're going to go to work and we're going to be aggressive in our actions, and we're going to serve the public with humility. And the other thing that I would say too, that I tried to demonstrate when I was a company officer, was that as we're out serving our community, that we're not there to judge, we're there to serve, because that person that we're serving, no matter their situation, be it good or bad, is loved by someone.
Right.
And our job is to give them the best care possible, because who knows, it could be my family that we're going to serve, right? It just so for me, it was, I truly had to lead by example, in that my skill set had to be on point, that I walked the walk, and that I believed in our purpose. And it was challenging at times, right? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was all sunshine and roses, because there were challenging days where, the crews didn't always gel like you wanted to, and there were just tough days where we just didn't get along, right? I mean, it happens that way. And my job was to bring the crew together. I will tell you, the biggest challenge that I had, though, as a company officer, was training, right? Because I was working with some senior guys that had a ton of experience, and how do you train them, right?
Right.
And how do you challenge somebody that's arguably got just as much, if not more, experience than you? And what I found was that they just wanted to be brilliant in the basics, man. They wanted to be proficient at doing the basic skills, because they knew that the ability to stretch a line correctly, force a door, or throw a ladder, even at the engine company, being proficient in those skills meant that we were doing our job right, and we were going to be successful. And that was, so for me, that was my biggest challenge, but it was one that I embraced, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I can get down with it. And we tried to put hose in the street every day that we went to work, whether it was training or whether it was on a call. And some days we did good, some days we didn't. That was that piece of it. But as I transitioned to the battalion chief level, the leadership position became a little bit different, because in the Durham Fire Department, battalion chiefs are true middle managers, right? That's where we are in the organization. So we've got it coming from both directions. And so the challenge there is that, okay, I'm an advocate now for the goals and objectives that our administration has, but I'm also an advocate for the people that I lead. And that how do I blend those two? And so leading at the battalion chief level, I do believe, is a bit more challenging because of that element. And And I've had to learn the hard way that there's some things that you've got where you can be a little more stern in your thought processes and the things you like to do at the company officer level. When you get to that chief's level, you might have to bend a little bit more because it's got to be more in line with what big chiefs want, right? So for me, the big challenge that I have found at the battalion chief's level is following policies and orders that I don't necessarily agree with and selling that to the troops, right? Especially if they don't agree with it. And that has been the challenge. But what I will tell you is that again, I try to start by leading by example, right? Again, let's be good at what we do every day. Let's believe that we're going to go to fires every day. We're going to have victims every day. Let's start there with that foundation. And as things come at us from the top that we have to do, we're going to do our best to make it work and to do what we can to fulfill the goals and objectives. So one of the things that I will tell you though that I feel like is really important at the battalion chief level is not forgetting what it's like to be a firefighter is huge. I have found that, servant leadership it's not just a buzzword. That's true action that you have to take, and that's kind of the form of leadership that I've taken. And the reason why I believe that is because I try to remember what it's like to ride the truck. I try to remember what it's like to be in each of those positions because each of those positions brings challenges. And if I lose sight of the challenges of what my personnel are facing every day, I can't be an effective leader for them when we're trying to move the organization forward because now I need to try and figure out how to integrate what they want to move forward and where we currently are and the challenges that we're facing. How do we migrate the two together so that we can be successful, right? And so for me, I believe number one that no matter the color of my helmet, I'm a firefighter. So my skill set's got to reflect it. My job requires me to be a leader on the fire ground. And being a leader on the fire ground is that I encourage aggressive firefighting because as Aaron Fields says it, and he says it best, aggressive firefighting is the solution on the fire ground. I encourage that, we're going to be good at firefighting because I believe that's the primary function of our job. So expecting fire, expecting victims, and being fundamentally sound or brilliant in the basics, if you will, is where I want my people. But I've got to live that too. I've got to live that as well. And so, when I'm leading them off the fire ground, I will tell you it's very much a servant leadership. But when I get to the fire ground, I'm more authoritarian, if you will. I'm gonna be the incident commander. And there are times I get a little sarcastic on the radio. I'm not gonna deny that, but I also believe in that if I'm responsible for this personnel operating out there, that when a decision is made, I'm sound in that decision. I'm good in that decision. I understand the risk that comes along with that decision, and I feel like I've assessed things. And I'll be the first to tell you, as a chief, I've missed things on the fire ground. But when I'm leading the fire ground, I truly believe I'm leading a battle, and so I make sure that my people understand the purpose and the why to what they do, and I want them to execute the task. And my job is to, I get the front row seat to watch it all play out. And so that's kind of how I lead. I'm not going to necessarily sit here and tell you that it's the right way, but it works for me and it works for my battalion, because I got to let my people work. If I'm not letting my people work, we're not accomplishing the goals and objectives set forth and what the citizens expect, right? I mean, the citizens expect us. What I can say in Durham is this, is that we are the evaluate the citizens love the fire department. They expect us to do our job, and we do our job, and we do it well. There are times where we don't. I mean, every department has ups and downs on the fire grounds, but I try and encourage that and foster that positive fire ground mindset that, hey, we want to go to a fire, we want to do good work, and we're going to do the right things the right way. And I really want to, if as the leader of that fire ground, I view that I'm in control, and I'm responsible for everybody out there. And whatever I ask them to do or tell them to do, I got to be able to look at that spouse or that child in the face if something happens to their loved one and be solid and firm in it. And so that having that skill set as a leader is to me is important. And so that's kind of my style, if you will, but that's two very different styles of leadership almost for the company officer to the chief, but there's a lot of overlap there. There's a lot of stuff that's worked both ways, in my opinion. So yeah.
And only answer this if you're comfortable, but you mentioned, and it is a tough position where, as a battalion chief, you're getting the information from the top of administration to you, and then you're also getting it from the firefighters to company officers the other way. But if you have an incident, or if you have a situation where, let's say, you don't agree with what administration's doing, I've always heard you can affect more change with rank. So, if as a battalion chief, if there's a policy you don't agree with, and you're not supposed to let the individuals below you know that, could you, as a battalion chief, kind of step in and go, "Hey, chief," like privately, one on one?
So
I have an
yes.
issue.
So yes. So I've actually done that quite a bit. And some has worked. If some of it's worked out for me, some of it has not. What I will tell you is that those conversations allow you to gain a much deeper understanding of why they may want to do something. All
Okay.
right. And gleaming that better understanding of why. The why behind it, because you may not have all the pieces of, you see a policy come out or a guideline come out and you're like, well, what is this? And there's some context there that you may be missing. So having those one-on-one conversations with chiefs, and one of the things that I will say is that my boss, Chief Baker, is really good about having these conversations and open dialogue, and even Chief Cole has sat down with me, which is our chief of operations. They sit down and listen. That I'm not going to sit there and tell you that it'll change, but what you do is you get to voice, and they will listen to you. Sometimes they'll adjust, and sometimes they won't. But one of the things that we do have to do, as leaders, especially in the battalion chief role, is that if they push something out, we've got to make it work, and either we're going to prove that it works or prove that it doesn't. And you're going to prove it one way or the other. I don't really think there's in between. There, some would say, well, yeah, there might be some gray area where some aspects of a policy may work and other aspects don't. And I understand that. But when it comes to something coming down that you may not agree with, and you're trying to sell it to the troops, what we've got to do is we've got to be good soldiers, and we've got to work it out and prove it one way or the other. And then if it proves right, then guess what? We move forward, but if it doesn't, then we have to go back and have some follow-up conversations. And you're right. I was told the exact same thing. The higher you move up in the organization, the more you can affect change. And so that was one of the reasons why I wanted to be a battalion chief. After many years of pushing back against it, I realized that, you know what, I can affect more change at that level. So, but yeah, great question. And that's kind of my thought process on that. But I will say that, you also have to be, when you have these conversations, for me, it's hard to not be passionate. I'm passionate about the fire service, and I'm passionate about what I believe. But it's hard for me sometimes, and I have to be mindful about that and be respectful of the position and the individual in that position, right? Because they hold a higher rank, and they are the chief, and Respect, I believe, is a two-way street. And if I want some respect back down, I need to show it, right? And that applies to my people as well, right? But that's a tough aspect of the job. I'm not going to disagree with that, because it's a whole lot more of them underneath you than it is above you. And when they're really on to something, it's one of those deals where I hear you and I'm working for you, but this is what's coming down, and this is what I need us to do. Let's all get on the same page, and let's try and make this happen. And if it doesn't, we'll go back to the drawing board, and we've got to work to find a solution. We can't just gripe because we don't like something. We can't just gripe because of that. We've got to have solutions in place, right? If you feel like that something doesn't work, just don't say it doesn't work because you don't like it. You've got to say, I don't think this is the right way of doing it, but here's a solution that I think may work, right? Or can we tweak how an operation that we're doing it a little bit this way and see if it doesn't make it better? And sometimes you get some compliance from above you, and then there's other times where no, it's hard and fast, this is what we're going to do, and then I got to go back and get the compliance out of my people. And it is, hey, look, I know you don't like it. I'm not even going to sit here and say that I like all of it, but this is direction. We got to make it work, and we're going to give it our best effort. And then if it doesn't, then we're going to go back to the drawing board. But we got to have some suggestions when we come back.
Okay.
So.
All right. And in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So aggressive to me doesn't necessarily mean interior, exterior firefighting or offensive and defensive firefighting. I think that the fire in the building lays out for us a lot of times what we're capable of doing. But I think aggressive in your actions is being knowledgeable, moving with purpose. I know there's some folks that run out there. I'm not a huge runner because if I run, I'm probably going to fall and turn out gear. But move with purpose. Understand the environment. Understand your space that you're working in, which means understanding the building, understanding fire dynamics, knowing what the rescue survey is telling you, so that you know how to search, so that you're occupying the space quicker, and we're cutting that time that the occupant is in a toxic environment. How does the engine company, how does their water application affect the environment that supports life safety? To me, it's aggressive is an all-encompassing term that describes how we operate on the fire ground, which is knowledgeable, moving with purpose, and wanting to do the job as much as anything, right? I mean, there's videos out there, and I showed one in my class at training days in Greensboro of a fire company that pulled up, and they were not moving with purpose. And I want firefighters that want to be there, that want to go to work, right? And that, if you've got that, the aggressive piece is easier. And it's easy to encourage aggressive operations when people are trained and they're competent and you trust their ability. That really makes it easy from a battalion chief standpoint in terms of leading the fire ground, right? And I think that helps a battalion chief too, an incident commander as well, when you're letting aggressive firefighters work, having the patience and the poise to watch the fire ground, understand that reflex time, the time it takes to do certain actions, and watching the building. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? When's the threshold that I remove them from the building? What's the threshold that I let them go back to work? And it comes back to being engaged, job knowledge, wanting to be there. To me, that's aggressive, right? I think that if you the if there's a if you ask me what is a large component of being aggressive, I think being the largest component of aggressive is twofold. It's job knowledge and being engaged.
Okay.
That's just what I believe. So yeah.
Okay. No, love it. Love it.
Awesome. Good.
I definitely want to hear your take on this, because we mentioned it before we were going to start recording, the where you come from. And I
Right.
think that is very true in the fire service, For some, if you don't work for a major municipality, city, region, you're less of a fireman because of that. You know, if you work for a station that's two stations only, you're not the same. But and I beg to differ because I think, in my opinion, I think departments, if your organization is more urban, suburban, and you don't have companies on top of each other, that's just your room for error needs to be a lot less than when you can have stack companies, you know, within minutes of each other. So what's your take on the where you come from? And you also said you want to talk about that chasing popularity.
So let me start by saying that years ago, I want to say it was 1998, 99, I think, because it was right before I got married. I had a friend come to me and say, "Hey man, let's be, you know, let's go get our instructor level." I said, "Okay." And at the time, I was thinking, don't really want to do this. And then I started thinking about a family. I started looking down the road, and I'm like, "Yeah, let's go do it." Because what prompted in my mind was that to be an instructor, you got to be super knowledgeable. And we worked alongside this guy. His name's John Barrett. He's assigned to Squad 41 in the FDNY now. And John just had a plethora of knowledge. I mean, just unbelievable. And I didn't get to work with John a whole lot before he left Durham to go to the FDNY, but he was always kind of the benchmark, right? Because of the knowledge that he had. And we always said, man, we'll see him in fire. He'll write an article in fire engineering one day. He'll be teaching FDIC, whatever. And I said, so yeah, I'll be an instructor. But if to be an instructor, I gotta know it like John knows it was in my mind. So that means I gotta know the job. Well, man, if I know the job, maybe that'll help keep me out of a jam so I can go home to my family. So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Was there thoughts about some part-time work? Sure, right? Moonlighting as a fire instructor, teaching some, you know. Then I got to thinking about, wow, I could teach in Creedmoor. I could come back and teach in Durham, teaching the academy, because I think that would be pretty nice. At that point in time, the only help that I'd had with the fire academy was on some live fire stuff. I was a helper, you know, while they were burning. I'm like, man. So I get my instructor, and everything's good. I start teaching the fire academy in Durham. And then I go and I meet this guy by the name of Andy Fredericks at FDIC. I took his engine class, and Andy didn't know me from anybody. But one of the things that I will tell you about Andy was that he was gentle, he was kind, and he cared. And he was gentle, kind, and cared because he cared about you as a student. And that's how I was just a student in his eyes. And, you know, I come from, I'm up in Indianapolis. There's a lot of Northeastern guys there, and everybody's used to smoothbore nozzles. The only smoothbore nozzles that I've ever seen were on my volunteer department, or at that time in Durham, they sat in a compartment on the truck. We never used them. So my knowledge base of them was, it was a tool, but I didn't know much about it at all. So he takes time with me, spends a lot of time with me. He's very humble. And to that end, I had a, email correspondence with him, and then that was it. You know, that was my interaction with him. But what he, the example that he set for me that day at FDIC as an instructor is like, that's the instructor I want to be like. I want to be that humble guy that cares about the student, that simply wants to improve the service. That he didn't care. I don't believe Andy cared anything about popularity. I think he just wanted the fire service to get better and be better. He wanted us to get better. And so for me, that was the message that I got from him. And so that was kind of the ideal instructor mindset that I wanted. That I wanted to be that instructor. Don't know if I don't think I ever accomplished that, but anyway. So fast forward through the years, I'm going to FDIC. I'm training. I'm taking as much as I can. I tried to do as much training as I could, you know, before my kids were born, because I was trying to get that family life work balance going. So my wife wouldn't divorce me or kill me. And I was doing some teaching, but I was teaching a lot in the fire academy for the city. And then the community college had a fire academy. I was teaching there, and then I was teaching in my volunteer department. So I was teaching around, and I had aspirations one day of maybe teaching at FDIC. And so I submitted few years, nothing, denied, denied, denied. And I'm like, it was because I come from a small organization. Is it because I'm come from a medium-sized fire department? Because when you look at who instructs, at that time, I was kind of looking at who was writing articles and who's doing the instructing. A lot of the guys were coming from much bigger urban places where, I mean, that they're getting the runs. You can't dispute that. But here I am, working in a medium-sized department, volunteering with a small fire department where we're doing fires with five, six, seven people. I'm not saying that it was right, but I'm saying that's what we were doing it with. And I'm like, well, how are we getting the same job functions done on the volunteer fire ground to match what our career brothers and sisters are doing, right? So, but we're getting it done. Now, again, I'm not going to sit here and say that we did everything right because I don't believe we did. We did the best we could, but there was a lot of room for improvement. And so what I began to do was I started my dad wasn't always thrilled about this, but I was mixing some career stuff from Durham with my volunteer department because I felt like some of the things we were doing in Durham would help in Creedmoor. And there were some things that we were doing in Creedmoor that I was trying to implement a little bit in Durham because I just felt like there were some things that crossed over. So after a few years of not getting accepted to teach, I was frustrated. I didn't really know what direction I wanted to go next. But I was being tapped. The city of Durham, they wanted me as a training officer because they felt like the job I was doing as a training officer was really good because I was connecting with students. And I felt like if they believed in me, that there's something there. Not that that means anything, but they felt like I can make a difference. And I, when you know, when I was on company training my crews, trying to share. So I wanted to challenge myself and grow. So again, like I said, applied to teach at FDIC, nothing really, just denied. So one year I went to, they do a class on Friday afternoon. So you want to be an instructor, author, photographer, whatever. Anyway, you want to be a part of the fire engineering family. So I went and sat in there. And so I took notes. They told me, hey, we need some volunteer material. And I'm thinking, wow, I feel like I've got something to offer there. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But again, I'm from a small fire department in North Carolina. It doesn't see the number of fires that, well, back in the days that my dad saw, it doesn't see nowhere near the same number of fires. And it's a small department, and then I'm not really from a big department. So anyway, they want volunteer stuff. I can speak to that. We'll see what happens. Couple years, nothing. Again, each year at FDIC, I would sit in there. So in 2011, I sat in the class. After the class was over with, I went up and I spoke with a guy by the name of Skip Coleman. Retired chief from Toledo. He was a technical editor for the magazine. And I said, "Chief, man, I've been in this class for the last 4 years. Y'all keep saying this. I've submitted. I don't really know. Can I have some direction? Because I don't know what I'm doing right or wrong." And so I worked with Chief Coleman a little bit. He gave me some advice. And I submitted and then I got accepted. And I'm like, okay. So I was doing some things wrong. He helped me out. It it got my foot in the door. Well, my first year teaching at FDIC, I think I might have had 20 people in the class, and it was at 10:30 on Friday morning, which is the last time slot for classes. I'm like, well, I'm gonna give it my best shot. We'll see what happens. And what that did was that started opening some doors for me here locally. And so as it started to open doors up, I started to teach a little bit more. Still trying to be a student of the game, learn as much as I could. And then the social media piece was starting to happen. So fast forward a few years, I'm able to go back and teach at FDIC. I'm teaching more, you know, regionally. By this time, I was teaching in South Carolina at their fire conference. I was teaching in Raleigh at the Safer conference. And so it was good. Well, I wanted to be on a UL committee. So you have to fill out an application. And it was the first one I wanted to be on was their host streams. I forget what the exact title of it was. Anyway, it was looking at the impact of host streams, I think was the name of it. And so I put in there, you know, where I'm from, thinking that, you know, I'm gonna use my City of Durham ties as more of my background as opposed to my volunteer, because why? I didn't think my volunteer side meant that much because it was a small fire department. And every year that I'd been teaching at FDIC, though, I'd been teaching on the volunteer service. So I was kind of trying to keep some things separate. And so, of course, I was denied on the FSRI tech panel. Okay, that's cool. I've been denied before. No big deal. Some years passed. And then I saw Chief McGrail. One year I was going to HROC. I saw him in the airport. I went up to him and I spoke to him, reintroduced myself because we had met years prior, and I reached out to him because I just had some questions. Right, I'm like, you know, Chief, I'm not chasing popularity. All I'm chasing is to make a difference and an impact. And I felt like that I was making an impact. Here locally where I was from, but I can also tell you too that it's hard to be a prophet in your own town,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was, you know, I felt like I needed to expand a little bit. And I also felt like, again, if I'm elevating the level of my instruction, it's going to have to elevate my knowledge. And again, I'm thinking my kids are getting older now, they're understanding more. Hey, I need to make sure that I understand my job, the ins and outs of it, so that I don't get in a jam and I can come back home. And so I talked to him about the direction, right? And I told him, I said, Chief, I said, you know, what's your advice to me? I said, I'm not necessarily trying to gain popularity. I just want to make a difference. I said, but I don't want to go the social media route.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time I felt, and I still feel a little bit this today, that it's hard to vet people on social media. But it's a huge platform and it's a very active platform in the fire service. And there's a lot of good information out there. And I said, but I don't want to go that route if I can help it. And he said, well, I'm going to tell you, he said, that's going to be a hard route. He said, you can do it, but it's going to be a much slower route to make an impact because it's a, social media is a very easy way to get your name out.
Right.
And I said, okay. So I took that. And so still, I was trying to work, do some things. At this time, I'd wrote a couple of articles for Fire Engineering. And one night at work, I was looking through social media. And I come across FSRI's page, and it said applications for the search and rescue tech panel are closing by midnight tonight. If you want to be considered, please fill it out. So at 10:30 at night in my bedroom at the time I was working out of Fire Station 17, that's where we were running out of, I'm filling out this application. Couldn't begin to tell you right now what I wrote on that application, other than I remember saying that in terms of search and rescue, I come from a small volunteer fire department where, sometimes search is an afterthought. It truly is, unless, you got some career guys or some guys that, that are thinking about search, because a lot of times in the volunteer realm, we were focused on getting water on the fire and stopping the problem, right? And that just what it was. Well, I get accepted on the search and rescue tech panel. So I'm talking with Craig and Keith when we have our initial meeting. And one of the things they said is that we're looking for people exactly like you that come from small fire departments, because the work that y'all do matters too, that it's not just the larger fire departments that matter. And I was like, wow, that's impactful. And because I think back to, okay, well, I applied for earlier one and I tried to go the route of using my municipal career, when that's not what they were looking for. They were looking for the small volunteer fire department who's really challenged with staffing, who doesn't have a lot of people, like you said, who has a less room for error for error, and we need your input and how we move things forward in the fire service. And so my point there is that because of that, I believe that anybody in the fire service can make an impact. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make a national impact. It doesn't even mean that you're going to make an impact at your state level. But if you can make an impact locally, why would you not do that?
Right.
And what that means is just simply being engaged to the job, because your fire department provides you experience, and nobody can take your experience away from you. What you have to be mindful of, though, is that you've got to use every opportunity possible. If you don't get the runs like the FDNY does or some of these other busier places, if you don't go to the fires, then you've got to maximize on every run that you go on to gain experience. And that means you've got to be engaged in the job and you've got to be paying attention. There's fires that I've been to where I get there and we stand in the front yard and then we're cleared or whatever. But if I didn't get a positive or negative gain from that incident, then I can't count that as experience. And so my point here is that smaller fire departments do have challenges where they're trying to get a lot of things done with very few people, but what they do is important. And for somebody to be dismissed because of the size of their fire department that they come from, that's really unfortunate, because I believe that we all bring something to the table and we all have something to offer. Because if we didn't, why would we say mentor the new kid coming in, share your experience with the new kid coming in? If we didn't have something to offer, why would we encourage all our brother and sister firefighters to do that? So I did that, and my point here is that I still believe that sometimes we have those who chase popularity in the fire service, and popularity is not a bad thing. It's not. But I believe if you're trying to chase excellence in the service because you want to leave it better than you found it, and you want to leave your organization better than you found it, and you want to help your brother and sister firefighters get better, then it doesn't matter where you come from. Be engaged in the job, learn as much as you can about the job, make the most of your experiences, and then share those experiences. Because I can tell you now, for the city of Durham, we're getting ready to lose. I think they said this year we're going to have 24 people retire out of a 400 plus department. Well, that's a huge hit on experience. And when you lose that, it's gone. It doesn't come back. And so we need people sharing experience. And it doesn't matter what size department you come from, you have something to share, something to offer. You just have to do it in the right way, and that's with humility. And you've got to be willing to be vulnerable and expose your own mistakes. Everybody likes to talk about what we do well, you know what? And I believe this: a mistake that makes you humble is way better than an achievement that floats your ego, right? So, I mean, I think that you've got to be real with yourself, but I also believe that you can make an impact, but you got to start where you are, and then things will come. And you know what? If you don't, I'm
Dead. Can you hear
good,
me?
fine. Yep, we're good.
Okay. So I think that I just believe that everybody brings something in, and there's something that you can give, and let the pursuance of excellence be your push rather than the pursuit of popularity. And like I said, unfortunately, I think that social media pushes that, right? Because who doesn't like going on their page and see a bunch of likes? I mean, we all like that. I mean, we all like that, but truly, that's not the essence of what it's about. It's about leaving the service better than you found it. And I just believe, after, even though I thought as coming through the years, I thought that I had to come from somewhere big to be able to make a difference. What Craig and Keith from FSRI proved to me is that you have value from even the smallest of fire departments. And my point is that to the people in the fire service today, if you're a firefighter, you have value. Don't negate your value. Don't be arrogant about it. Be humble about it, but you have value, and be willing to share. Be that kind, compassionate, genuine, humble individual that wants to see the service better, not just to get more likes on social media.
No, I agree 100%.
So that's just where I'm at with it, and I've tried to live this too, is that I understand that I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Rich Ray is not, and I'm okay with that. Right, I'm okay with that. If I'm not good enough for you, then that's okay with Richard. We can still be friends, but we can still talk shop, do all that. But if I'm not good enough to come to your organization and share, or if I'm not good enough to be at a comp, that I'm okay with that. That doesn't stop me from wanting to pursue excellence and leave the fire service better than I found it.
All right. In your opinion, what do you see the fire service doing well on, and what can they improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
Ooh, so that's a good one. So I think your best recruitment tool is how well you retain your membership.
There we go.
That's my
Yes,
belief.
sir.
And I will say that I believe good retention comes from good leadership. And sometimes I think that we miss the mark in leadership on retaining people. And here's what I'll say to you about the retention and recruitment piece. If you can re if people love where they are because they have good leaders, because if you it's no mistake that most people leave a job because of leadership. They don't necessarily leave because they dislike the job or the money. It's because of leadership. That's proven. And so when you have good leaders in an organization that truly value their personnel, they give them what they need to do their job and do it well, and they let them work. You know what they're gonna say? They're gonna say, "Hey man, come over here and be with us. This is what we can do." And here's the thing. I think this applies to career combination and volunteer fire departments. And case in point, right? I mean, one of the big things about the city of Durham is always, I mentioned it earlier that it was always promoted as an aggressive fire department. Well, that if you're allowed to work being an aggressive firefighter, that is a re that that retains people. And what happens is that now you have your personnel that go out to different training events, and they're talking with other firefighters, and they're like, "Tell me about your area." Well, we're allowed to do X, Y, and Z. We have this going on. That's your recruitment. Your best recruitment is word of mouth from your people, and how well you retain them. And like I said, I just believe that that transcends across volunteer combination and career. And the other element there is good leadership. If it's a toxic place, people are not going to stay. People are going to create boundaries, and they're going to be mindful about their safe space, if you will, because they want to stay in a good mindset, and they're gonna, especially if it's a career piece, they're going to look for other opportunities. And if it's a volunteer organization, it might be that they distance themselves and they don't respond as much. They don't come around as much because they're trying to create a healthy boundary because it might be a little toxic. And then if you've got a toxic environment, now what are your people that work in that environment? What are they saying to people on the outside? So that crushes you're not going to recruit if you've got that going on. Do I think that there's some elements of recruitment that are outside of that? Sure, there are, right? I mean, like, we got to let people know that we're hiring. We got to let people know what the job's about. But I truly believe if you want to recruit people, you've got to have a good retention plan in place of how you retain them. And sometimes it's not just always about the fires and the rigs and the gear. Sometimes it's about the actual culture itself and the environment that's promoted. Well, I think that's a huge element of it.
Sir, all facts, Chief, all facts. I
Right.
mean, whether and that's the thing, whether if you're listening to this and you're a chief officer, hell, chief of department, wherever the case may be, you have to be able to digest and look into yourself, look in the mirror and go, am I doing just that? Am I because as a firefighter, I'm not saying every day I want to be coddled, but when I do something good, or when a department does something good, or when the shift does something, who doesn't value appreciation? Who doesn't want to hear, hey, good job?
Amen to that. And that's one of the things that I work really hard to try and do, and I may even go over the top with it some, brother, is that when my people do good work, I try to let them know. I try to tell them, and I tell them that I appreciate them because I don't say it just out of lip service. I truly mean it. And if I see them doing good work, you can rest assured they're going to be recognized. And you know what? Who doesn't like hearing, "Hey man, good job. Brother, you did great. Y'all knocked it, y'all did a jam up job." And you know what? Most firefighters, that's all they want. They don't want anything else, and they want to go up
That's
and run.
right.
So
That's right.
I mean, and to me, and this is where this is what amazes me, is that how hard is that, and what does that cost?
Yes,
What
sir.
does that cost you? That is, and here's the thing, but you've got to be genuine when you tell them that they did a good job. You can't be blowing smoke
Yes.
because firefighters are going to see through that. But if you're genuine about it and you tell them, "Hey, look, y'all did a jam up job. I appreciate you. Thank you." That's all they want. That's all they want. Most firefighters, that's all they want. They're going to go back, and you know what they're going to do? They're going to work even harder for you on the next one.
Best. I've been saying that. Yes, sir. Yes,
So
sir.
that is, and like I said, I try and live that with my people. But I'll also tell you too, if they don't do a good job, I gotta let them know
You
there
gotta
too.
let them know. Yes,
Let them know.
absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'll tell you that I think they appreciate that too just as much as they do the good job aspect of it, because I'll be honest with you, I want to know where I can improve. I know that I need improvement in a lot of areas, and if I'm doing something, hey, I welcome that, because all I want to be is better, because the citizen deserves me to be better. And so I think you got to do both. But like you said, hey man, a good job goes a long ways, and it doesn't cost you a thing.
That's right.
I tell you one other thing that don't cost you a thing too. If they do a good job, it's a really difficult call or whatever. I haven't met a firefighter yet that didn't like ice cream. Or, yeah, it can be a little expensive now, but what about buying them a meal one night for supper? Those are the little things that you can do. Or better yet, maybe they don't even want you to do that, but maybe just go and hang out at the station and talk about their families and talk about that side of their life. And then mix in, hey, I really appreciate the job that y'all do every day. You're training, you're working hard. It proved on this call. You know, give them your time, because that's really what a lot of them want, is just that they need the value. And over a phone or over a text or over an email, it ain't always the best. But when you're looking at them face to face too, and you tell them they did a good job, especially when they've got sweat running down their face and they're nasty, they want to go to work for you even more. And so I just believe that.
Love it. Love it, Chief. Love it. My last question, I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
So let's that's a great question. And one that's been on the forefront of my mind for a bit now, because I just crossed over the 28 year threshold. My goal is to work the full 30, and then we'll kind of see what happens from there. But truthfully, if what I would really like to see is that if my son decides that he wants to be a City of Durham firefighter when he graduates college, I'd like to see myself working the last couple of years of the job with him. That'd mean a lot to a dad. So, but you know, he's also in an area that's got a really jam up fire department, top notch, big department that daddy would be proud if he was there too. So, but as far as I go, you know, I'm really, really, really am thankful and enjoy the battalion that I'm working in, the people that I work alongside of every day. So I'd like to finish my career out working alongside of them. And I would like to continue making some contributions where I can and sharing what little bit of knowledge I do have, be it at whatever conference or fire station or wherever I get the opportunity, just to share some knowledge so that I can leave it a little better than I found it. And then when I finally do decide to hang it up, me and Miss Paula are probably gonna hang out at the lake and spend some on the lake. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. But as far as my fire service career goes, definitely want to work the full 30. Don't know where I'll be after that. What I do know is that I want to continue to share. Do I think I'm gonna have the longevity in the job that my dad has? Probably not. You know, this year marks the 60th year my dad has served. But I just don't think that I don't think I got 60 years in me. But anyway, it's hard, right? Because you just don't step away from something that you're passionate about and that you truly love. And I mean, when I tell you that I'm passionate about the fire service, I am. I genuinely love it. And I want it. I want it. I just want to see it get better in every aspect. And I know that there, you know, things are changing. You know, the industry's changing daily. We're you know, new challenges on the horizon. But I will tell you this. I'll tell you what I don't want to be. As much as anything, I don't want to be that chief that hangs on too long, and people say he should have left 2 years ago. I don't want to be that guy. When I walk away, I want to be able to say that I gave it my best. I left it better than I found it, and I'm going out on a positive note. And I know that, you know, I kind of, as much as I'm going to be looking forward to spending some time with the wife and with the kids and whatever they got going on, walking away from the fire service is not going to be an easy task for me, and I know that. So we're going to take it day by day, embrace it, enjoy it, and you know, I'm going to keep on keeping on because just because I love it. So, and I just let me just be really clear here. I'm just truly humbled and thankful that I've had the opportunity to share with you today. This was never on my radar that I would even remotely be asked to do anything like this. So to be able to have the opportunity to talk shop and share a little bit about my career and some of the opportunities that I've had has been nothing short of amazing. So thank you, brother. I really appreciate it, Danny.
Yes, sir, Chief. I mean, this past a couple months ago, a few months ago, I listened to your presentation at Training Days Greensboro, and I was like, "Yes, sir." And as you, I, in your words, you're not just lip service, because what I found profound about the whole experience of your lecture was that you had members line the entire front row from Durham. I guess members that are in your battalion that pretty much are supporting you and showing, yep, this man right here is leading by example. So actions speak louder than words, Chief. And at the end of it, I looked towards my buddy who was with me, and I was like, that was a jam up presentation. And it was fantastic, sir.
Well, I
So I
appreciate that.
had to have you on here.
Well, thank you so much. And yeah, I'll tell you, it was a little overwhelming because yeah, those there I think there was only one that wasn't in my battalion, or two that wasn't in my battalion that were sitting on the front row. And the other two were jam up individuals too. And that was really humbling for me as well. And then to have my son there was pretty awesome too. So, but yeah, for those guys to be there and to be sitting there, it made an impact on me too. So,
Yes, sir, Chief. I appreciate you. I sincerely mean this. I appreciate you taking the time, because I came up to you after it was done. You're probably like full of emotion. You're getting yourself settled after talking. And this little guy comes up to you. I'm like, "Hey, Chief, I'm such and such. I'd like for you to do this." And you're like, "Sure." But I just appreciate you accepting
absolutely.
it.
Yep.
And yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. The pleasure's been mine. And I've been trying to listen to all of them since we met at Training Days. And bro, you're doing good work. Don't you stop doing what you're doing either. Keep on keeping on too. So,
I appreciate it. Thank you, Chief.
yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.